Tonight, I want to talk about listening to your thoughts. When you listen to your thoughts, more than just thinking them, you have the ability to control them. The skill takes some practice to develop, but it's completely possible. And I have found that listening to my thoughts is really helpful as I go about my days. The first step in this listening process is the basic technique of mindfulness meditation. We pay attention to the breath and notice when that concentration is interrupted. We can use some other constant sensation as an anchor for our attention. I often keep some of my attention on the way that my hands feel as I'm working, or the way my body feels when I'm moving around. Just as in meditation, during the day, I'll know when I've lost my focus. Maybe not right away, but there are clues. There's that familiar experience of realizing that I'm now in a different room and wondering, why am I here? I think the expression staying in touch is really appropriate. The thread of our awareness is less likely to unravel if we keep some of our attention focused on what it's like in the moment to be in the body. The more I stay in touch with the physical reality that I inhabit, the more clearly my thoughts will register in my awareness, and the less trips I waste to other rooms. The ability to listen to our thoughts is something that we can acquire, and the best time to do that is during meditation. What holds us back the most is probably pride. We want to be good at what we're doing, so we get stuck on trying to hold attention on the breath. With mindfulness meditation, that's not the point. The second step in this process is just as important, if not more. Concentration is a capacity that we develop each time and then use it to establish mindfulness and possibly gain insight. In mindfulness or insight meditation, we use the concentration that we establish to recognize when something interrupts our attention and the effect that it has on us. We don't just ignore thoughts as we do in concentration practice. When we recognize that our minds have wandered into another room, metaphorically, we use the control over our attention that concentration gives us to notice where we are and what's going on there. Recognizing when something interrupts our attention requires what I call stepping back so that we can observe our thoughts clearly, not blurred by our being so close that we're absorbed in them. We need this distance to see or to listen to our thoughts. This mental distance can also be thought of as holding our attention on the breath lightly enough that we're not clinging to it. We don't take interruptions as a personal failure. In fact, it's the interrupting thoughts that we want to be able to observe without being swept away by them. To understand what I'm talking about, it helps to bear in mind how fast and agile our sneaky minds can be. The Abhidharma, the 2,000 plus years of Buddhist psychology, talks about this in terms of mind moments. Infinitesimally tiny units of time, smaller than we can imagine. Our minds are constantly producing thoughts and jumping from one to another faster than the mind can see. So a moment of mindfulness is like standing in the middle of Grand Central Station and keeping track of the movements of someone that you pick out of that fast, chaotically moving crowd. Yeah, you're going to lose track of them for moments, like when someone comes between you. But you remember what you want to watch, and you look for and you spot it again fairly quickly. That function of remembering what it is that you're watching for is why the Pali word we translate as mindfulness also means remembering. This skill can also be thought of as steering our attention. We're not just stuck to the breath or to thoughts that arise. We can go back and forth. We can dodge and swerve and come back as long as we remember what we're doing. And if we get lost, we can always come back to the breath and begin again. The next vital skill we need to master is sustaining enough distance from thoughts that we can observe what they're about and how they affect us. This is what I mean by recognizing thoughts. Like the other skills that we've gained so far, this takes practice. Let's go back to watching a chaotic crowd. Say you've picked out the little girl from Spielberg's movie Schindler's List. You recognize her because she's wearing this red coat. Each time you lose her and then catch a glimpse again of her coat, you recognize that she's the one you're following. After a while, you realize that you care about that girl and about what's going to happen to her. You feel afraid for her, and you feel a kind of tenderness. She's aroused your natural capacity for metta and compassion. At this point in our practice, we can call on several of the perfections, the paramis, to support our progress. We need enough energy to sustain the way we control our attention. It takes effort to maintain enough mental distance to listen to our thoughts without getting swept away with them. We also need to be truthful with ourselves so we can hear the thoughts we don't want to admit we have. Or maybe we don't want to feel our fear about what might happen to that little girl in the red coat. Or whatever our attitude may be toward our thoughts. If we can be open to that truth about ourselves, then we're receptive to deeper revelations about ourselves, to insights. Holding our internal experience at arm's length like this and seeing it for what it is takes patience and determination. It also requires that we're loving and kind to ourselves. We need to accept the truth that we are not always what we like to think we are. Whenever we're able to accept the truth of things as they actually are, we have equanimity. All of these mental and emotional capacities are beneficial not just for listening to our thoughts, but for every aspect of our lives. It can be tricky, but invaluable, to see not just what we're thinking, but also how it affects us. To do this, we need to be in touch with our bodies, which is why meditation teachers so often emphasize becoming aware of how the body is feeling. Our emotions register in the body. They are not just mental events, however we might want to think that they are. Emotions can hurt or feel really good. And that's a physical event. If we don't let ourselves feel our feelings, they hide deep inside us and fester. Only when we process them by finally feeling them will we be free of the subliminal ache that they cause. By watching the body's reactions to thoughts, we can deeply know how thoughts make us feel and heal the wounds of suppressed emotions. That's what it means to recognize the effects that thoughts have on us, how they make us feel. We can give these effects names like resentment or fear, but their names don't matter as much as getting familiar with whether thoughts make us suffer with tight muscles or a burning stomach, or give us the light and energized feelings of being happy. If you've seen Schindler's List, you might remember how you felt about that little girl. Looking back on it now, it may give you the warm energy of caring about her, or just the cold, tight aversion toward what you feared would happen to her. The body's reaction is a signpost to the way we should deal with certain thoughts. If a thought leaves the body relaxed yet energized, We can explore those feelings, perhaps cultivate them during our meditation or afterwards. If it puts the body under stress, then it's not a wholesome thought or attitude. It's making us suffer. For as long as they last, we want to explore the physical feelings that are caused by a thought. It's important not to go back to thinking more of the thoughts that cause those feelings. That would just prolong our suffering or possibly taint a wholesome pleasure with craving. For example, unless we're grounded in equanimity, fantasizing about that child's fate could be self-torture. Or if we cling to the thought that she could escape, well, that's clinging, dukkha. With equanimity, metta, and compassion, we can just observe our feelings flicker through our awareness, the way that child's red coat flitted through the crowd. When your feelings eventually fade, guide the attention back to the breath or to states of mind like loving kindness, and then continue watching the breath. When the meditation period is over, it can be valuable to revisit the thoughts that pulled you away from your concentration. Try to identify what gave those thoughts their energy. See if you can dig a little deeper into the genesis of that suffering. That scene in Spielberg's film is so powerful because it can provoke such a wide spectrum of responses. When we explore our thoughts, attitudes, etc., and the feeling that they evoke from the vantage point of metta and equanimity, we learn a lot about our minds. What we're doing is training the mind. It's a gentle training with as much love as we can muster for ourselves and others. First, we observe the mind's processes and get to know how the mind makes us suffer or makes us happy. Next, we classify the effects that our thoughts have on us emotionally by identifying wholesome ones that make us peaceful and content, and the unwholesome thoughts that make us suffer. Finally, we practice guiding our attention away from the unwholesome thoughts and toward the wholesome states of mind. This is what the Buddha taught in the part of the Eightfold Path called wise effort. It's the way children and puppies learn to navigate through life. If they do something that hurts, they learn not to do that again. We let ourselves feel the dukkha caused by unwholesome thinking in order to recognize that this thought caused this suffering. In this way, we learn and heal. Once we understand this cause and effect, we can keep the mind from going places that end up hurting us. The untrained mind can cause a lot more suffering than just the feelings that accompany specific unwholesome thoughts. There are real-world consequences that are much worse than merely finding ourselves in a different room and not knowing why. Unexamined thoughts can make us buy foolish things, say unkind words, or go to dangerous places, hurting other beings while we're at it. We can be led into all sorts of trouble by thoughts we don't listen to. Like addicts whose minds keep urging them to gamble, we have to learn to hear that seductive whisper and recognize it for just what it is. Otherwise, we keep getting yanked like a puppy that keeps trying to run past the end of its lead. Once we know how to listen objectively to what our mind is whispering to us, we learn so much about our own nature and how to avoid causing harm to others and to ourselves. In listening to our thoughts, we stay alert to our experience, both around us and within our minds, hearts, and bodies. We step back and examine the subtle suggestions we're given by the mind and feel the urges that they prompt within us. We consider the effect these thoughts have on our feelings and our lives and use wisdom to discern if that's what we really want. And all of this can transpire in a few mind moments. Having recognized harmful thoughts for what they are, we turn our attention away from them and toward beneficial ones. I'm not talking about becoming Mr. Spock. We're not turning into Vulcans. We get to keep our personalities. Though some of our more troublesome impulses may just stop arising, we're simply finding the path through our sometimes tangled minds to living happy, loving lives. Thank you.